Welcome to the Pre-Dead Boys. It's a podcast about the history and culture of death and decomposition. My name is Dorian. With me, as always, is Max. What's going on, Max?
Too much. It's Labor Day. You know, getting by, celebrating my freedom. My tummy's a little upset right now, because I really celebrated my freedom last night. I went to a very sketchy pizza place that I won't name on Indianola Avenue. Mm. And I bet you know which... It's not the one that I know you're thinking about.
Okay.
It's the one a block north of the one you're thinking about.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I don't want to name them.
Yeah.
So I love this place. But I did walk in. I had ordered ahead.
Yep.
And I kind of stood there for like a full 5 minutes before anyone did anything, which is fine. But the whole time, the dude in the back was making a pizza, and he wasn't wearing gloves.
Uh-oh.
He was just kind of making the pizza, and he kind of looks over and is like, hey, I bet you get this a lot, but, do people tell you you got the face?
The face?
The face. And I didn't know what to say, so I was just like, yeah, all the time. And he was like, man, you got the face!
Wow.
And I left, and I have no idea what that meant. And I asked multiple people what they thought that meant, and they didn't know. But then I ate the pizza that the man with no gloves made me, and now my tummy has been upset all day.
He cursed you.
He
cursed you with that pie.
Yeah. But it was great, and I love that place.
He spoke some kind of incantation. The face was actually part of some unholy hidden language that it created a demon in your guts.
But my guts feeling very bad actually does tie into the episode topic today.
Oh.
So, Dorian, you know that part of every David Lynch movie where it just gets super fucking off the rails and there's just 30 minutes of footage of, like, worms eating the fabric of reality or whatever?
Yes. It's my favorite.
So this episode is kind of like our version of that because it's kind of death positive adjacent. It's very death centric.
Okay.
But it is rad as hell, and you're going to love it. So, Dorian, you know how sometimes you eat cheap pizza and your tummy gets really upset?
It's a relatable experience, yes. Uh-huh.
And sometimes you feel like there's enough grease on the cheap pizza that you feel like a grease fire might start in your stomach.
Yes, some might describe that the process that takes place as a grease fire, yes.
So buckle up for this very special Pre-Dead Boys Crack Into a LaCroix moment. Because today, we're talking about spontaneous human combustion.
This photo you sent me with the flaming skeleton DJing a really rad party of skeletons, that makes a lot more sense now. It's a skeleton on fire.
I've been hinting it. Well, no, never intentionally.
Oh, okay.
I searched skeleton on fire and scrolled through a few and got to this one, and I was like, this one's rad.
Yeah, with the turntable also on fire.
So do you remember when you first learned about spontaneous human combustion?
I don't. I feel like it's something that has always been part of my subconscious, that it's been with me my entire existence.
That is exactly how I felt, actually.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, but I think it bodes well for us doing this podcast that we both feel very innately connected with SHC, which I don't like as an abbreviation. But I like that we both are very innately acquainted with spontaneous human combustion.
Or shk, if you will.
I feel like I may have seen it on an episode of, like, Unsolved Mysteries or something.
Ooh,
when I was a kid.
Great show.
I don't know. I feel like it may also just be in my DNA.
Maybe. Maybe it's something that we all know deep down in our hearts is definitely true and not a hoax of any kind.
Well, in case any of you out there listening decided to spontaneously listen to this episode without any prior knowledge of the topic, here's a definition for you.
Spontaneous human combustion refers to the death from a fire originating without an apparent external source of ignition. The fire is believed to start within the body of the victim. This idea, and the term spontaneous human combustion, were both first proposed in 1746 by Paul Rolle in an article published in the world's first science journal, the Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society of London.
So, I know it sounds kind of out there when you think about fires just randomly starting.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have any farming experience, though.
Literally none. I shot guns on my friend's grandparents' ranch one time. And I saw a farm out the window a few times.
Being
that's
in Ohio.
It. That's it.
That's
yeah.
a common experience.
Yeah. Actually, can I tell you really quick about
Hell yes.
my roommate when I lived in a house on OSU, Ohio State College campus?
Mm-hmm.
He planted corn in our front yard.
What?
And it grew. There were...
Like knee high by 4th of July and all that?
Yeah. It was like, I would say about 5 feet tall. You'd go down this street on Ohio State campus and see a really ratty looking awful old house with five
corn.
Or six stalks of corn fully raised and fully grown in the yard. Unfortunately, the corn got worms and we couldn't even try.
Oh, I was going to say if you got to eat any of this fully erect corn.
But... No, unfortunately. it was a failed experiment. But shout out to my buddy Reed for farming on OSU campus.
We're doing the damn thing.
The soil is pretty much all cigarette ash and Wendy's wrappers, I think.
Well, you don't get to water them either. It just gets covered in beer.
Just, yeah, watered with beer. Maybe that's where the worms came from for some reason.
I'm actually also amazed no one just rolled up to your front lawn and kicked it. Just
yeah.
kicked it.
Stole our corn.
Because every time I've seen a sunflower, someone just invariably ends up kicking it really, really hard and breaking it.
Violent kids on campus. Go Bucks, I guess.
Go Bucks. But a farmer might know, an actual farmer, might know that sometimes fires do spontaneously happen.
Yep.
So if you have a pile of hay, like a big old hay bale, or even leaves that you've raked and put into a bag, as plant matter decays, the bacteria that gets in there and kind of chews the leaves down, as a byproduct of breaking stuff down, that bacteria generates heat, similar to what happens during composting.
Okay.
If you have a large compost pile, that compost pile will generate heat.
Just as it's deteriorating or
yeah, just as it goes. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So some people actually choose to generate minor amounts of heat for their home in that way.
Yeah.
Which seems stinky, but I guess you can purify it.
It's efficient.
But eventually, over a long enough period of time, like about 3 weeks to a month, if those leaves dry out in the process of decomposing, they can actually spark a fire from the heat that builds up in the bag of leaves.
Uh-oh.
There was a pretty bad fire in Chicago in the 90s that sparked in an apartment building because they bagged up some leaves and left them in the garage. And then they just kind of left them there for a while, and the leaves caught fire, and that caught the building on fire, and there was a whole mess. And
wow.
Chicago, the Big Apple. So jumping back to that old-timey article, now that we know that it's not that crazy for fires to just start out of nowhere, you can actually see the actual journal that this was published in at this Google Docs link that we'll put in the show notes. So shout out to Google for putting just cool old stuff everywhere. Take a look at that article. So this is a facsimile of the actual journal that this original spontaneous human combustion article was published. You can definitely tell it's kind of old-timey because all the S's look like F's.
Yeah, that infuriates me when you read old typography and they just have this weird character.
I don't even know what to call it. I do want you to read it.
Okay.
But I did know that it would infuriate you, so I did transcribe it for you, replacing the weird F things on your notes. So how about you break this off for us?
Bless your heart. Thank you for sparing me from having to read.
Yeah.
The article titled An Extract by Mr. Paul Rowley. Upon the death of the Countess Cornelia, Bandy of Cesena, to which are forjoined accounts of the death of Joseph Hitchell, who was burned to death by lightning, and of Grace Pett at Ipswich, whose body was consumed to a coal. The Countess Cornelia Bandy, in the 62nd year of her age, was all day as well as she used to be, but at night was observed when, at supper, dull and heavy, she was put to bed. In the morning, the maid, taking notice that her mistress did not awake at the usual hour, went into the bedchamber and called her. When the countess did not answer, the maid opened the window and saw the corpse of her mistress in this deplorable condition. 4 feet distance from the bed, there was a heap of ashes, 2 legs untouched, from the foot to the knee, with their stockings on. Between them was the lady's head, whose brain, half of the back part of the skull, and the whole chin were burnt to ashes. Amongst these ashes were found 3 fingers blackened. All the rest were ashes, which had this particular quality, that they left in the hand, when taken up, a greasy and stinking moisture. This episode was brought to you by LaCroix. A refreshing moisture.
That is not stinking.
Sparkly moisture.
But it is really goofy that they found this countess's body and then immediately started trying to pick it up. And we're like, ew.
Greasy.
It's like oily.
Okay, so what was intact? Her knee down to her feet.
Uh-huh.
So her calves were there. And
the stockings.
Stockings, okay. 3 fingers. And her head? But only the front half of her head? I'm so puzzled by that description.
I think what they mean is that, like, the bottom part of her jaw.
Okay.
That was reduced to ash.
Interesting.
But that kind of the top part of the skull was there.
Yeah, so what could possibly it's not like she caught on fire, because then she'd be evenly decomposed all over the place, right?
Yeah, you would think. You would imagine.
So just parts of her exploded into flames?
So this is weird, but it's nice that even at this early account, Rowley describes the whole scene in great detail. Like, if you look at this original article, it's pages long. And one of the coolest things about it is that Rowley describes similar cases. Like, he mentions this guy who's been burned to death by lightning, which is a really cool way to describe being struck by lightning.
Yeah.
Instead of struck by lightning. So what you can note here is that by describing similar cases that are different causes than spontaneous human combustion, Rowley demonstrates that he understood that what happened to this countess and what happened if you got struck by lightning or if you died in a house fire, that they were different things.
Right. Not the same instance.
Yeah. So we can't chalk this up to old-timey people not knowing what lightning was or anything
right.
like that.
Right.
Also, you would hope that no matter what these maids were doing, they would have noticed a large thunderstorm happening.
Yeah.
And their castle or house or whatever getting struck by lightning.
Yeah, totally.
But it's cool that you can tell that there's a difference between the traditional spontaneous human combustion case and a lot of, you know, lightning strikes or burning down houses and things like that. Yeah. So I was able to find one instance of spontaneous human combustion that predated Rowley's description. And it also sounds quite a bit different than being struck by lightning or dying in a fire. Now, it can't really be verified completely, but it comes from a physician named Thomas Bartholin, who wrote about it in his 1621 book, Historum Anatomic... Fuck me, why did I... who wrote about it in his 1621 book, Historiarum Anatomicarum Rariarum.
Wow. Very good.
It's like some old-timey Latin stuff going on there.
Nailed it.
But here's what he wrote in his book, which is just about, like, weird old anatomy that they figured out in the 1600s.
A knight called Paulinus Vorstius had the unfortunate distinction of being possibly the first case of spontaneous human combustion back in the 15th century. Apparently, the knight enjoyed a few glasses of strong wine at his home in Milan in 1470, and then promptly began to vomit up fire. Then, the story goes, he proceeded to burst into flames and die in front of his horrified parents.
Wow. I wonder how quick it was, like, if he was just pounding glasses of wine, and then did, like, put one down, slam the glass down, and then just barfed flames. It's pretty metal.
Yeah.
Like, if you imagine this medieval knight just drinking and puking up fire and then catching on fire.
This has got to be a video game somewhere where you can play a knight that burps fire.
It's like Trogdor, but it's a dude instead.
Yeah, totally.
The best thing about this was that since this is like an old-timey illustrated manuscript, of course they put goofy-ass pictures in everything.
Yes!
And the picture of this poor dude running around like a total doofus while being engulfed in flames is so good.
Oh, man. That's him? What's this?
I don't know what that little fish monster thing in the bottom right is.
They were taking some creative liberties, but I'm okay with that because this is awesome. This is my new phone wallpaper.
So, Barthelin sourced his story from Vorstius's descendants, which, I don't know, apparently this guy who is running around on fire did manage to have some progeny at some point, which is cool.
Yeah. It's a bummer that he left behind children and maybe some a widow of some sort, but it's also pretty cool. Like, if you have to have a horrifying story about how your dad died, drinking wine until he burped fire and exploded is probably the best story to tell.
Yeah, that's pretty rad. But since it's sourced from ancestors, the direct historical veracity is arguable, and also it's kind of a crazy story.
You think so?
Just vomiting up fire.
I mean, we read it on the internet, so I believe it.
That's true. And it came from an old tiny book.
Yeah.
That's why Rolly's case is important, because he was the first to really describe spontaneous human combustion in a trained eyewitness manner. Also extremely important to note is the fact that Rolly's description of spontaneous human combustion is remarkably similar to modern-day descriptions and photographic evidence of the event as we know it today. In fact, here's a description from the case of Mary Reeser in 1951. This report was written by J.R. Reicher, the chief of police of St. Petersburg, Florida. So, you know, a reliable witness.
Right, chief of police.
You would hope. He investigated Mary Reeser's body and said this in a written report sent directly to FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover.
Ooh. The body of Mrs. Reeser was partially cremated with the exception of the left foot, which was burned completely in two, about 4 inches above the ankle. Shoe, as had been worn on left foot by the deceased, was still intact. The chair in which she had been sitting was completely burned away, leaving just the springs. The carpet was burned in an area of approximately 3 feet.
So, note the similarities here between the Countess that we described earlier and Mary Reeser.
Right. The left foot is at least partially intact.
Yeah, the fire doesn't go all the way down.
Yeah, the shoe is still intact.
Mm-hmm. And it also appears to be a centralized fire that causes minimal damage to the surrounding area.
Yeah, except that chair.
Yeah, that chair got pretty wrecked.
Got ruined. Get wrecked.
Do you want to see a photo they took at the scene?
1,000%, yes.
Scope it, son.
Holy shit.
Right? It definitely looks like this woman burned alive.
Wow.
And her legs are there.
Yeah, that's so savage. This is, oh man, it's grainy and brutal looking. Like, I feel like I shouldn't be looking at this. But yeah, I mean, it looks like a centralized explosion there.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it looks like. Is almost like a small grenade went off or something.
Yeah, inside of her belly.
Yeah, and you know what also is similar to the Countess case we talked about earlier?
What's that?
If you look up at the top of that pile, you see what you can see there, peeking through those ashes?
Is that her skull?
That's her skull.
Wow. Yeah. Like, mostly intact, but it looks like the jaw has been exploded away.
Yeah. Well, the rest of the bones aren't there.
Yeah.
Now, one of the most fascinating things about descriptions of spontaneous human combustion is the pattern of consistency. We don't really see this happen in a lot of other areas of supernatural or weird, unexplained reporting. If you consider the difference in UFO reports over the years, for example, or how people have reported Bigfoot, sometimes he is sprinting at a crazy fast speed. Some people say he walks more upright and can't run that quickly. If this was a real phenomena, you would expect there to be a little more consistency in how it was being reported.
Right.
But something that lends spontaneous human combustion actually a fair amount of credence is the fact that cases of spontaneous human combustion are easily differentiable from other instances of people burning alive. Or being burned to death by lightning.
Yes.
But when you look at this photo from the Mary Reeser case, the house did not burn down around her. This was not an, you know, she left a fire untended and it burned up the chimney and she just happened to catch fire while putting it out.
Right.
Another thing that this shows is that the old-timey people that we normally kind of give shit for not knowing what they're doing, maybe they knew what was going on here.
Right.
Or more accurately, they definitely knew what this wasn't. This wasn't you tripped and fell in your fire that you were heating up your gruel on, or some lightning came in the window of your cottage and struck you.
Unless it was really badass lightning that only hit you in the chest.
I imagine that looking like the poster for The Thing, where it's like the blue lighting surrounding the person.
Yes.
One of the toughest things about investigating and looking into these cases of spontaneous human combustion is that, obviously, you're not going to survive flames bursting out from the inside of you. That is why we're talking about this on a death podcast.
It is related, we swear.
Yeah. But fear not. I was able to dig up a few cases of people actually surviving spontaneous human combustion.
Excuse me?
In this book, appropriately titled Spontaneous Human Combustion, by Jenny Randles and Peter Huff.
Wow, survivor? How does that even work?
Right? It's kind of outrageous. But this book has a lot more photos of spontaneous human combustion.
Yes.
Going on in it.
Yes.
If you want to flip through some of these grainy, burned out photos really quick. Kind of talk us through the photographic journey you're going on.
This is gruesome. This is crazy. Oh, man. This is the Mary Reeser case. They're shoveling her bits.
And it's tough because you have to treat this like a crime scene.
Yeah.
And you say shoveling there, it almost feels undignified.
Right, but what else can they do?
What else are you going to do, you know?
Burned fragments of human.
Yeah. You can see throughout these photos, it looks pretty similar.
Right.
There's not huge burn marks all over everything. It's not like the house caught on fire. It's just a very centralized burn, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned before, there are some cases in there of people who survived spontaneous human combustion. So here's one right now.
On January 5th, 1835, Mr. James Hamilton, professor of mathematics at Nashville University.
You're going to be going there.
I will. Walked home in the intense cold. While outside his house, Hamilton felt a steady pain like a hornet sting, accompanied by a sensation of heat in the thigh of his left leg. Looking down, he distinctly saw a light flame. The flame was several inches high and flattened at the top. Instinctively, the professor slapped at the flame, but to no avail. Then bringing cool scientific methodology into practice, he cupped his hands around the area to cut off oxygen. Whether this was what succeeded in extinguishing the flame is open to conjecture, but the fortunate man survived a fire, which his doctor claimed was internal.
This may be the only time in recorded history that scientific methodology is described as cool.
Cool scientific methodology saved this man's life.
Saved his life. But this guy's case is really interesting because it involves not just one, but two people, the professor and the doctor, of high intellectual standing.
Right.
These aren't people who seem like they would be particularly prone to exaggeration or not understanding what was going on after.
Right. These are not conspiracy theorists. This guy is a professor of mathematics.
Yeah. And his doctor who investigated him would hopefully know what a burn looked like and would be able to say, this looks different than what I've seen before.
Yeah.
Now, if you want to doubt the veracity of this account that happened in the 1830s.
Which I kind of don't because it's fun, but...
Yeah, it's cool.
But we're intellectually honest here at Pre-Dead Boys.
And what could be more intellectually honest than reading another case from the 1970s?
Oh, very recent.
So this one is reported by Harry Price and Vincent Gaddis, two fairly well-known paranormal investigators. And it focuses on arguably the most well-known spontaneous human combustion survivor, Jack Angel.
Jack Angel.
Which is a fucking rad name.
Yeah. Jack Angel, a traveling salesman, was doing his rounds on November 12th, 1974. He checked into a Ramada Inn in Savannah, Georgia, to get some sleep before heading out the next day. At about noon on November 16th, 4 days later, Angel awoke. His right hand was charred black on both sides from wrist to fingers. Angel's reaction was unexpected. Feeling no pain, he climbed out of bed, showered, and dressed. He entered the motel's cocktail lounge, still insensitive to pain. He ordered a whiskey, although he claimed normally not to touch alcohol. Then, he collapsed. Angel later told reporters, "The next thing I knew, I awoke in the hospital, Memorial Medical Center in Savannah, Georgia. And there's a doctor with a pair of tweezers pulling skin off my arm. One doctor explained to me I wasn't burned externally, I was burned internally." After the examination, Dr. David Fern declared, "This is a third-degree burn which damaged the skin severely, and most of the underlying muscle of the hand, causing a total anesthetic hand. The ulnar nerve is completely destroyed, and the median nerve shows questionable viability. Angel's hand was so badly damaged, it was as good as dead."
It was actually burned so bad that he had that hand amputated because there was just no way for it to function again.
It's bizarre how this is either an extremely thorough hoax where they've thought through all of the science and created something really believable.
And made a dude cut his hand off.
Yeah. Really committed to the bit.
Yeah.
Or this actually happened? And that's wild.
Yes.
This is definitely getting outside of typical conspiracy theory territory and into something where this is an actual event that needs an explanation.
Yeah. Again, it's weird. He wakes up 4 days after the fact. He doesn't really understand why he was out. But one of the things you'll see people kind of take shots at is, well, wouldn't he know that his hand was burned really bad?
But the nerves were burned first.
Exactly. That's what happens in a total burn.
Yeah.
You know, there's a first degree burn, which is on the epidermis, which is the outside layer of your skin,
yeah,
like a sunburn. And then there's second degree, which goes a little lower. A third degree burn is when you start really getting into the meat and muscle of your body,
yeah,
wherever you got burned at. And then a fourth degree or total burn, which sounds like what happened here to Mr. Angel, that's when you start burning nerves and bone, and there's just nothing that can be felt there.
Yeah.
So, you know, as I've mentioned on here before, I've had a tooth removed. When they pull that tooth out, they pull the nerve with it. So if I feel around in my mouth to where that tooth used to be, there's no sensation.
Yeah.
I can eat ice cream that's really cold, and if I bite down, I can feel that it's cold everywhere in my mouth except for that one spot where there's a missing tooth. So it's not really that weird that Jack Angel couldn't feel this burning flesh that was attached to him at the time.
Yeah, so this was a fourth degree burn where it burned the nerves, but it was a weird sort of reverse fourth degree where that fourth degree was actually the first degree. That's pretty wild, but I guess that explains why he just didn't notice at all that his hand burned and it didn't wake him up.
Yeah, if the nerves were gone first, then that would make sense.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Angel's story has gotten a little weird over the years, and part of that is because his doctors and his lawyer, because he was going to sue this hotel, they didn't really know how to approach this legally.
Yeah.
Like, it would be weird to sue someone based on something that most people don't accept as real.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was trying to get money out of this because he's like, hey, my hand is destroyed.
Somebody's got to pay.
Yeah. So what his lawyer suggested that he do was claim that there was an electrical fire and that's what burned his hand.
Hmm.
And yet that doesn't really explain why his hand was totally burned, and yet he didn't seem to have any pain as it was happening. Because you would assume that from an exterior source, you would notice.
Yep.
So there's some weird stuff that gets kind of goofy with spontaneous human combustion as people look into stories a little more. But, you know, I think there are some legitimately bizarre cases that hold some water. Jack Angel's case is a good example of that. James Hamilton's case is a good example of that as well. But once you start to line up some details in some other cases, some weird things start to emerge. A lot of the time, the victim of spontaneous human combustion is found sitting in a chair. If they're not, they're found sitting upright in their bed. I guess, like, formerly upright. I don't know how you really, really judge that.
Yeah.
A lot of the victims are known to be smokers.
Mm.
You know, they would have a little cigarette before going to sleep.
Yep.
Many of them have also been described as heavy drinkers. And that's the weird thing about Jack Angel's case, is that he claimed to usually stay away from alcohol.
Right.
But even if you think back to these early cases, the Duchess, we talked about earlier,
yep,
was mentioned as being dull and heavy.
That's a little rude.
It's a little rude, but maybe you could also see, if that's not a physical description, it could be she was kind of drunk that night.
Yeah, that's fair. Getting heavy.
I'm going to start saying that now.
Like, getting dull and heavy.
I'm going to get a little dull and heavy tonight after this football game, huh?
Yeah.
So as you might surmise, if you combine cigarettes, alcohol, and maybe some cheap Ramada Inn mattresses, it's not crazy to think that some spontaneous human combustion victims may have been pretty drunk, tried to sit down in a chair to have a cigarette, and then passed out, dropping the cigarette into their own lap, thus starting the fire themselves. Now that starts to make even more sense if you think about what is usually left over in a spontaneous human combustion victim. It's the legs, right?
Right.
And if you think about it, fire tends to burn up.
Yes.
Not down.
True.
So if you imagine sitting, as you are right now, and you drop something onto your lap, that fire is going to start on your thighs.
Yep.
And then move up your body, not down. But there's still the issue of the intensity of the fire.
Right. It's not a gradual fire that grows. It's an instantaneous explosion, basically, right?
Yeah. We tend to think of fire as a roaring blaze, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what these scenes look like. It looks like it happened really quickly. And you also would think that if you dropped a lit cigarette on yourself and it caught fire, you would think you would wake up and put it out.
Oh, God!
Yeah, you just pat yourself down real quick.
Yeah, totally.
But if we consider something called the wick effect, this may not have to be the case. And I want to make very clear, this is not the John Wick effect.
Oh, damn it.
Have you seen the promo photo from John Wick 3 where he's riding a horse?
and holding a gun at a dude's head?
Yeah. Well, the dude is on a motorcycle?
Yeah.
That's sick.
Very excited.
I'm very amped about that.
Yeah, not to be confused with the John Wick effect, where people spontaneously combust because John Wick comes and shoots them.
Which may be a fate better than what John Wick will actually do to you.
Yeah.
So here's what the wick effect actually is.
The wick effect is the name given to the partial destruction of a human body by fire, when the clothing of the victim soaks up melted human fat and acts like the wick of a candle. The phenomenon is found to occur under certain conditions and has been thoroughly observed. The wick effect theory says a person is kept aflame through his or her own fats after being ignited, accidentally or otherwise. The clothed human body acts like an inside-out candle with the fuel source, human fat, inside, and the wick, the clothing of the victim, outside. Hence, there is a continuous supply of fuel in the form of melting fat seeping into the victim's clothing.
So if you imagine, you know those like tiki torches?
Yeah.
That the neo-Nazis love now?
Yeah, idiots.
When you light one of those, that wick, you would think it would burn away.
Right.
But since it soaks up all the oil, that actually prevents the wick from burning.
Okay.
So if you imagine that your body, which has a bunch of fat inside of it, I'm sorry, but all human bodies do. It's got, you know, fat and meat inside of it.
Yeah.
All of that kind of leaches out and causes that fire to be able to burn in a very controlled manner, which might kill you, but would not easily spread to other parts of the house.
Interesting. Okay.
And that's why, in the Mary Reeser photo, it burned the chair that was directly below her, because the fire would be centered on the What's this fucking part of your body called?
Torso?
Your
torso?
Jesus. I wanted to say thorax. The first word that popped in my head was thorax.
On your human thorax?
When I was a kid, we had to do this song. It was called, hey, thorax, abdomen, abdomen. And you would, it was like we learned about ants or something.
Right. It teaches you about bugs, but it certainly distorts your understanding of the human body.
The human body. Hey, have you seen my thorax lately? You know what they say when you go to the gym, you can't skip thorax day.
Yeah, you absolutely shouldn't.
Yeah.
Or else you'll have an underdeveloped thorax.
But you could see how if the fire was concentrated on Mary Reeser's abdomen, it would burn the chair below her, but not necessarily her legs and calves, which survived intact. So the wick effect is, you know, the generally accepted best explanation for spontaneous human combustion that we currently have.
Right.
But a major deciding factor on if this is true or not is actually going to be the addition of FSC to cigarettes.
FSC?
FSC. FSC is a glue that they put in cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, like, don't smoke. But, you know, I like a cigarette every once in a while, but there's a lot of chemicals in there.
Yeah, you don't smoke them because it's a healthy choice.
No.
You're inhaling God knows what.
Yeah, who knows? But they decided to put some glue in there to make cigarettes a little safer. Because now, if you have a lit cigarette and you drop it, it'll burn itself out in 10 to 15 seconds.
Okay.
This is in contrast to older cigarettes, which if you dropped it, it would just keep burning.
Yeah.
So you can see how previously, a lit cigarette dropped onto your lap as you were sleeping or dropped onto your hay mattress at your shitty motel would just light up and cause a fire to erupt, and maybe you wouldn't know about it before it killed you.
Mm-hmm.
So if cases of spontaneous human combustion start to disappear or peter out as FSC is introduced to more and more cigarettes, this may actually be the case that cigarettes were the main enemy all along.
What a lesson.
So, spontaneous human combustion, as scary as it sounds, has managed to capture people's curiosity for centuries. When we went over the Mary Reeser case earlier, I actually pulled some of those descriptions from the FBI's files on spontaneous human combustion. They maintained active files on this phenomenon for a long time.
Yep.
And eventually, someone put in a Freedom of Information Act request and got these files from the FBI. But when you request information from the FBI, they release everything they have on it. They don't just send you a couple clippings. They just send you like a legal box full of all this stuff. So if you go to the website where I got this information from, it's called the Black Vault, and it has a ton of Freedom of Information Act things. You can look over all the files the FBI had on spontaneous human combustion. As I was going through the files, I found a letter written in 1965 to the FBI that I think is going to warm your heart up a little bit before we close out the episode. Hopefully not enough that your heart bursts into flames.
I hope so too.
But I think it's going to end this episode on a really heartwarming note.
Warm, not hot.
Warm, not hot.
Dear sir, I am very interested in spontaneous human combustion, SHC. We talked about it in my 8th grade science class. I asked my science teacher where I could obtain further information about SHC. He said, probably the FBI. So could you please send me all of the information on SHC cases that you have? Thanks a million. Sincerely, Redacted. My address is Redacted.
I think this letter is very sweet.
It's so cute.
This little 8th grader writing a letter.
Yeah.
Because they went and asked their teacher, probably very genuinely, hey, where can I find more information on this? And the teacher's just like,
I don't know, the fucking FBI
fucking
or something.
FBI,
just bug them about it, I don't care.
And this kid, like, has to write them a letter and says, dear sirs.
That's so sweet. What a good boy. Or girl.
Who knows? It's redacted. We have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
But it's heartwarming, isn't it?
It is. Maybe the most uplifting ending of an episode that we've had so far. Which, well, you know, comes with the territory of talking about death. It's not always happy.
I felt like if we were going to talk about all the cool shit that spontaneous human combustion does, and then some nerd-ass scientist is just like, your body's just kind of like a candle wick and a tiki torch. I felt like we needed a little punch up at the end to get us on a better note.
Yeah, sorry hoaxers who believe that people just randomly explode for no reason. We really kind of took the wind out of the conspiracy sails there, I feel like.
Unless you're Jack Angel, and maybe you did.
That is a big question.
Right?
Where'd his hand go?
Yeah. I doubt that this dude needed money so bad that he was like, I guess I'm going to set my hand on fire.
Yeah, and that is not explained by the whole cigarettes burning in a lap thing.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll never know what happened to Jack Angel's hand. Here's what I do know. Thanks for listening to the podcast. You guys are the best fans in the world.
I do know that. I do know we have the best fans in the world.
I know that for a fact. Let's hear from some of them. We got a couple 5-star reviews, Max.
Multiple.
The first one comes from iTunes user Ohio Coconut. It's a cute name. Ohio Coconut says, awesome. 5 stars. Very in-depth researches and creative perspectives. Like it. I do like it, and I like your review. Thank you very much, Ohio Coconut.
You know, normally we call them Buckeyes here. And they're tiny.
Yeah, they're not the size of coconuts. Could you imagine? Could you imagine the candy Buckeye, which is a peanut butter ball dipped in chocolate? Could you imagine one of those the size of a coconut? Just imagine it. That's glorious.
I can, and I'm very allergic to peanuts.
Oh, right.
So,
well, I'll imagine it.
Yeah.
And really wish I had one. We got another review, and this is a special little one. This comes from the Dead Kids Club podcast. They say, good stuff. Well done, guys. This podcast is a nice balance of being well-researched, informative, and funny. You'll like this podcast if you like learning about pretty random death facts that you can impress your mates with at the pub. Looking forward to hearing more soon. I feel like I probably should have read that in an English accent of some kind if I was going to talk about mates at the pub, but I can't do a very good accent, so.
It may have been insulting.
It might have been. Max, who are these guys? Maybe you've got a little more information about the Dead Kids Club podcast.
Yeah, so Dead Kid Club is a really neat podcast. They're kind of kindred spirits of ours.
Yes.
Over out there in London town with The Clash.
Cheerio.
I was listening to one of their episodes today. They actually are all PhD students at a school in London that has Jeremy Bentham's head.
Yes.
And we're like, oh yeah, we know that. We pass it every day, which is fucking rad.
Yeah, it is.
But I listened to an episode recently from them where they talked about bone art, like ossuaries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it was cool because they were talking about American soldiers stealing bones as mementos from Japanese soldiers in World War II. And it was really interesting hearing that from a non-American perspective. And also, we got to get over there.
Yes.
Because in that episode, at the top of it, Marie and Lisa were talking about a bar that was also like a museum of death and had a bunch of weird stuff in it. But also, you could get cocktails that were death-themed.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah, we got to get out there.
Absolutely.
Please check out the Dead Kids Club podcast and support Marie, Lisa, and Aaron, because they seem like very cool people.
Yes.
And if we could get over there and collaborate with them and get some cool death drinks, I would be super fucking into that.
Absolutely. So if you'd like to support us going to London, or if you'd like to just help us pay off our monthly podcast dues and whatnot, you can toss us a $3 or more tip. Go to ko-fi.com/predeadboys. And thanks to the Dead Kids Club for getting in touch with us. If you would like to get in touch with us and tell us about the cool stuff in your neck of the woods,
or send us cool skull selfies.
Yes, yes. And if you know of any other stories of spontaneous combustion or just weird stuff, we talk mostly about death and try to keep it pretty scientific, but honestly, Max and I love weird stories in general of bizarre things happening like that. Why don't you drop us a line? Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PreDeadBoys. You can email us, predeadboys@gmail.com. And you can join our Facebook group. Chat it up with us there. Just search PreDeadBoys Podcast. Hey, Max, you like that intro music we just heard?
I do. I like it quite a bit.
Wow, I wonder who did that. Well, I know. It's Brat Curse. It's the song About Time. You can check them out at bratcurse.bandcamp.com for more music from them.
Columbus Heroes.
That's going to do it for us. Are you all right?
I'm okay.
Are you exploding?
Oh, shit.
The fire's bursting out from within me.
No.
Do you think if you pounded LaCroix, you could vomit up, like, maybe not fire, but...
orange zest?
Yeah.
Flakes of grapefruit peel?
Let's try it. Let's just pound some LaCroix really quick and see if we can throw up fire.
Yeah, we got a long night ahead of us. We're going to sign off. Max and Dorian here reminding you, you're going to rot.
Dude, I bought a, like a nose hair razor.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's changed my life. I feel so much more confident about being around people who are shorter than me now.
Oh, yeah. Because they can just look right up in there, huh?
Peep right up in there.
Yeah.
Which I work around a lot of kids.
Yeah, that's
But now I just get up in there and just...
I suppose I should get one of those too, but I'm not really self-conscious about it. I just kind of blow my boogers on them.
You just get it. Get out. Get out. Get out from below me.
Don't look at me.